is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here today. Kavada Kuchia, Executive Director of Casa de Belen. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First of all, give folks kind of an overview about how Casa de Belen began and about what its purpose has been.
Yeah, Casa de Belen was founded in 2004 after we saw a need in the community. Actually, our local League of Women's Voters did a study on youth homelessness in our community, finding about 540 youth were homeless. So that led to our opening, and we were a family homeless shelter from then on.
And how long have you been involved?
2017, I came on board.
And what did you, because initially you had a different role.
Yeah, I came on as a mentor program coordinator. So my goal and role was to recruit mentors and positive adults for homeless youth and pair them up, as it's shown to be a best practice on pushing youth forward.
So when did you become an executive director?
December of 2018, I became big ol' ED.
And it's been a busy time. Now, earlier this week, you announced that you're closing for now. Talk about that and how that all kind of took place.
Yeah, so when I first came on, I saw a need to kind of look at our programming and redo it all to incorporate best practices in working with these youth, as well as with a hope of partnering with DHS so that we could also foster youth. In the middle of 2018, a Senate bill came down that kind of prevented that partnership, which was unfortunate. But we were also faced with our licensing being up for renewal, and if we didn't open, we were going to lose our licensing. So that led us to opening in November of last year, and going from there, and it's been about 7 months. It's not in vain, but there's been an increased need, and the funding sources aren't there. So I would say the analogy is we're kind of a broken airplane in the air trying to fix it. We really need to go back to the drawing board and to our community.
So you're basically, we're already up there in the air providing a service, but needed to kind of retool some things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not in vain. You know, this allowed me to take a look at what our programming looks like. Previously, we had basically been a family homeless shelter. This allowed us to just look at homeless youth. So I didn't even know exactly if we had a demographic since our county is so large. But, you know, we served almost 50 youth in that 7 months. So it's been quite a learning experience. And, yeah.
So are the kids that you've been serving mainly from Roseburg, or is it farther out there in other parts of the county?
All different parts of the county. A lot were from Roseburg. But, yeah, they spread throughout the county. And, yeah, we serve the entire county and beyond, actually.
Talk about what you've seen. You mentioned the need has been increasing, yet at the same time you're kind of trying to retool. But what kinds of things are kids facing that have led them to need to be at Casa de Belen?
Youth come to us for a lot of different reasons. A lot of uncertainty in the home and behaviors of both youth and their families. And often lead youth to us. So substance abuse is often an issue. These youth come from long lines of trauma, just enormous amounts of trauma. So their needs are really high, and but they're amazing.
Do you see with some of the kids you've been serving sort of a generational issue with homelessness or some of these related issues like substance abuse and mental health?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the main prevention tools, or what, you know, is kind of at the base of our foundation, is to try to break that cycle and allow them to kind of live their dream and live a life of positivity, and so that they don't continue in a cycle of both mental health, substance abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and beyond. Yeah, about 83% of youth that were served these last 7 months have reportedly mental health issues. So that in itself has been quite a challenge for us. So many trips to the ER and it's stressful work, right? And it's nonprofit, so yeah.
You mentioned some of the funding sources have been drying up. Any particular reason for that?
So the need is heightening. I mean, COVID brought on a 20% increase in intakes alone, but the need in general is heightening. The state of Oregon, for all the entire state, gets about $1 million a year for runaway and homeless youth. Just to kind of compare that, Washington gets about $16.5 million per year. We recently, and there's one state staff member, I talked to him today, Matt Rasmussen, he's amazing, he runs the state programs. But looking at all our funding of all runaway and homeless shelters in the state, about 10% of our funding comes from state resources. So that in itself is, I mean, that's unfortunate. So unfortunate.
And then what are some of the other funding sources you've had? What types of organizations?
Grants, and then looking at the funding from the state, from all our programs, federal funding, fundraising, individual total grants, all surpass the amount that the state is providing to runaway and homeless youth. And just to put it in perspective, with some counts in 2018-19, there's about 3,600 unaccompanied homeless youth in our state. So that's significant for $1 million a year to support all of them.
What will happen with the building right now during the time it's not being used for the young people?
So it'll continue. That building's my little baby of sorts. I've gone to a lot of other shelters, and we're blessed to have such an amazing facility and for the youth to have all their own rooms. And, you know, it's 27,000 square feet. It'll continue to be an asset for us, and we look forward to incorporating it into future plans.
And at this point, is there, since no one is in there being housed, is there an opportunity to get any, you know, work that maybe you've been wanting to do done during this time?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We did a lot of that first kind of go around of a shutdown. But so during this hiatus, you know, our goal is to go back and almost do a needs assessment of our community. Is there a need? And I kind of laugh when I say that because, you know, I would certainly say there is a need. But I'm also at the front of the lines, and I've been so pulled into operations since we've been opened. I think originally I thought that I would be able to branch out a little bit and speak to the outskirts of our county, and I've needed to be working the program a lot more. So this will allow me to hopefully gather some specific data, and then just look at our programming. Is what we're doing and what we've been doing what our community needs? And hopefully with that new fresh data and numbers, we can get some committed buy-in so we can be sustainable in the future.
Now, you've got a board of directors as a nonprofit organization. How many people are on that?
Oh, what do we have right now? Eight individuals. Matt Cole is our president, and we have Shelley Briggs Loosely as vice president. I've brought on some other individuals that I value greatly, and looking to diversify the board and yeah.
So what kind of things do the board members do to help out?
All different things. Some of them are more on the ground and, you know, show up almost daily, such as Shelley. Others have particular skills that are useful, such as attorneys and people in policy and equity type positions. So a vast array of service.
Now, how many staff did you have before the closure?
There was 9 of us. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the other day, so they're all laid off at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, they were laid off, and I ugly girl cried when I did that because I felt like I had finally had a team that was just so cohesive and very service-based and focused on our mission. And I was pleasantly surprised that a majority of them are going to continue throughout this hiatus to assist and volunteer with this community needs assessment. So it was as positive of a layoff as it can be. And a lot of them say they'll be back whenever we're back. So I'm blessed and grateful to have the staff that I have.
And for those that are helping during the shutdown, that's a lot of commitment to go from being paid to do something to helping out and doing some of it not.
Yeah. Yeah. Could that be a positive spin on the COVID situation? You know, I mean, yeah. Some of them are just in places in life where they're able to do that. And I'm grateful for that. If they branch out, I'll support that and try to kindly recruit them back.
Do you have any ideas about how things might operate differently in the future, or are you still just starting to take a look at that?
Yeah, we're at the beginning of that. So, you know, I would say sky's the limit. I'm going to remain open-minded when I kind of look at the community, right? So the size of our community in itself and its rural nature is a challenge. So I often wonder if maybe programming, you know, looks like us doing some traveling. I have a snow cone trailer and a bus sitting at CASA. You know, I often consider what if we need to convert a bus and hit up Glendale or Reedsport or Drain or up towards Diamond Lake and bring some case management or basic needs in these, you know, moving vehicles so that we can better serve youth. And that's just an inclination. I don't really know. That's what this community needs assessment will be about, kind of, you know, what does our community need and how can we solve those challenges?
It seems like the need, as you've demonstrated with just some of the numbers of folks you've had, is pretty clearly there, and it's certainly been an issue in adults. You see that around the community as well. That's a whole separate topic getting debated right now. But the funding really seems to be the key issue, and the funding in a time when not only are state budgets clearly going to be even tighter, it appears, and of course the next legislative special session in the next week or two will be going over some of that. But always, you've got the grants, the nonprofit organizations. Some of those are real healthy and well-funded, but I'm sure you've got to probably demonstrate your cause even a little bit harder to look at getting funding in the future.
Sure, yeah. I mean, even planning some fundraising events, you know, is a challenge. And with the guidelines constantly kind of changing, or we're just not sure day-to-day, even that in itself is a challenge. But, you know, we're unsure in this world right now. So people, I think, are holding on to their financial portfolios a little bit more closely. So that does put a damper on it a little bit. That being said, we've also, you know, had some opportunity for increased funding due to the virus. So, you know.
What do you think, timeline-wise, or is it just really a guess right now, how long it'll take to get things going again?
Yeah, it's totally a guess. I'll tell you what, having to come back and having taken a hiatus a couple years ago, I'm not interested in doing that a bunch. This isn't exactly easy to not be able to have a youth homeless shelter. So as much as I want to serve the youth, I want to do it right. I want to be here for years and years and serve hundreds and hundreds of youth in our community. So I hesitate to give any time. I don't even know any time anyway, but it'll be a time of certainty for our sustainability, that's for sure.
Going through spring and into the summer before you closed with COVID-19, what kinds of things did you have to do differently? Or were the changes minimal just because of the size of the facility?
It was pretty quickly. So as I saw a lot of challenges, you know, we've been open for about 7 months. I feel strongly that we have some amazing leaders in this community. So I started, you know, there's no use in reinventing the wheel. So I started trying to find mentors and other individuals that can, you know, that are much smarter than me to kind of take a look at our situation more in-depthly. So, you know, had conversations with the team at Cow Creek, and Aviva has certainly wrapped themselves around us immensely with support. Mike Fieldman, you know, representing Gary Leaf, has really stepped up. So I've kind of been calling them my dream team. They probably help with a lot of my confidence moving forward. So, you know, I kind of went to them, and we arrived to this, you know. Well, the analogy of the airplane thing was perfect when it was mentioned to me. So there wasn't a lot of preparation, and all the youth were transitioned safely to friends or family, and not back to homelessness. So that's a positive. But I still have some, you know, fridges to clean out at CASA.
So when you did the transition, when you had to announce it to the kids that you were serving, what was the reaction there?
I think there was a mixed reaction. I was pretty careful about how I delivered that message. I actually brought them into a couple different groups based on, you know, the equity of the youth, their maturity levels, their ages, how long they had been there, their personal situations, which is kind of how we serve youth anyway, meeting them where they're at, not it's all this way or that way. So there's a couple different reactions. A lot of them were just more worried, I think, about us, which is the nature of these youth. They're amazing. But I think they were more worried, what are you guys going to do? And then we're looking at them like, well, you know, we want to take care of you. So
what was the time frame from when you told the youth this was coming to it actually being closed down?
A couple weeks. I actually told staff, and then immediately after telling staff, told youth, which I was questioning if that was best. But I figured them hearing an inclination of it in conversation wasn't the best way to deliver it. So, you know, kind of pulling the Band-Aid off the wound. And it's tough, but I think it's the only way that we're going to have to work this out so we can be there, you know, in the future.
Well, and probably for kids that have had a lot of uncertainty in their life already, I mean, they can see things, you know, they can probably just, you know, if you would be talking with the staff or something, probably sense things maybe even better than a lot of other folks.
Sure, yeah. They're very smart, and, you know, we ran kind of like a family. So I think delivering the message and all together and in the most positive environment was going to be best. It was raw, and it showed our emotions, but we're all human, and it did impact all of us. So
for people listening, that especially ones that are familiar with the work that's gone on for this number of years with Casa de Belen, and they're interested in helping you retool and move forward, what are some of the ways they can do that, and especially financially as well?
Yeah, I have a feeling that when I kind of get an advisory committee around me, which is, I'm thinking, the next steps, that we'll need a lot of volunteers for this community needs assessment. It's not easy doing counts of youth homelessness, and much more challenging in rural areas in a county with our size. So at least in the beginning of this hiatus, I will definitely need volunteers that are willing to maybe help me with this needs assessment. I think that can look like a lot of different things. I mean, someone can be at home on the phone, you know, or in the field when it's safe to do so. So there's a place for everyone. But yeah, volunteer needs in the beginning are going to be critical for us to kind of gauge our community. And then, well, financially, I think kind of speaks for itself.
Well, and where can people, if they want to make a donation, where do they send it?
You can get on our website and gather information. I will still be at CASA often. And I have our main phone on me at all times. That's 541-677-0073. Yeah, our info at casadebelin.org. And I'm around.
All right. Kavana Kuchia, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
1257 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.